Hello and welcome to the New Frontiers podcast. In today's increasingly digital world, the relationship between technology and society has never been more important. New Frontiers is Barclays' annual technology conference where we bring together business leaders, innovators and decision makers to engage in a conversation to identify and address the key ethical questions that must be unpicked for society to thrive. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Jean Vier, founder and CEO of AgriLedger. Now, I hesitated on your name there because you did throw me a little bit. So when we were having a bit of a pre-chat, you did introduce yourself as first name only, like a Madonna, like a Beyonce. So all I was thinking of during the entire part of that intro was, don't introduce Jean Vier as Madonna. Anyway, I digress. That set the tone for the next 20 minutes. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
AgriLedger, a really interesting and quite innovative agriculture business. Everyone thinks agriculture is just farming and boring, ploughing of fields and growing of stock. Why don't you tell us a bit more about AgriLedger?
So AgriLedger is actually using what we would term blockchain disruptive technology and really other types of technology which exist currently, mm-hmm. and how do we use them in an industry where the value chain is very much broken.
Okay.
Because there are so many people, because obviously we have the farmer at one end and we have the customer, those of us who must eat,
yes.
at the other end. And getting food to us is becoming increasingly more difficult. We hear of statistics by the FAO that if we don't increase food by 70% by 2050, there won't be enough food to feed the planet. That is not true, actually.
Oh, really?
There is enough food, but the food is getting lost because
the wastage
is happening. The inability to get the food to market, to those places that are needing, not understanding what is sitting in one place needed somewhere else. Sometimes it can be in the same country, two different parts. And then finally, what's happening is because it's not equitable for the farmers, we are not seeing that industry grow.
Okay.
So we have the big players, but the big players are unable to themselves do. I just came from a panel where we talked about this, the fact that the over-industrialization of agriculture, which is basically chemicals, mm-hmm. overgrowing, has caused issues, and we need to go back to basics. So how do we heal the soil is what they were talking about. And so with us, it's not so much the business of agriculture in terms of doing the toiling. It's understanding what needs to be done,
yep.
but then creating the trust that is necessary. So one of the things you were asking me about before is, can I explain a little bit about blockchain?
Absolutely.
Or distributed ledger technology? Most of us will have heard about it through the Bitcoin. And I think in reality, that is the most successful case study, mm-hmm. for this technology, in that it is, let's think, internet with trust. We don't trust right now, if we read something, the internet, that it is who it's supposed to be.
Age of fake news and all that?
Yes, the age of fake news. So now, if I can actually, in a system, and those systems have existed, so it's nothing new. It's,
yeah.
just that now it's available to most of us to use. If I can have a piece of information where it's written, not written in one place, but in many places, mm-hmm. and cannot be erased by anyone, you can say, this is the truth. And then if that truth changes and there's a consensus that that truth has changed or that event or that information has changed, everyone else agrees. So there is a checking and rechecking that is done technically without having to have a whole bunch of people coming in and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, in terms of the use of the blockchain in agriculture, you start creating where the value chain does not need as many intermediaries. It is, you know, people talk about, oh, blockchain will remove middlemen. It will remove those who are not necessary to the process.
Okay, yeah.
Those who are taking part of the fat in, and then you create a much more leaner process, which means it's much more equitable and there's more for everyone to participate, who participates in it.
Yeah. So being able to use that piece of distributed ledger technology to be able to kind of evidence where something's gone from A, through all the various cycles to get to our table.
Yes, so that's one part of it.
Okay.
The other piece that we're doing is we're evidencing that it belongs to the individual who has produced it.
Okay.
Which means he or she does not need to sell it early in the chain in order to be assured that they will be paid.
Yes.
So most farmers, so in a developed world, the farmer will wait, but a lot of time will wait at a detriment because he's waiting for somebody else to get paid, to be paid, and then they come back and said, no, this is not what you had, and all these things.
Yeah.
So you have people like AgriDigital in Australia, which has been working in grain, so assuring that the grain producers are getting paid based on what actually they delivered. But if now we look in the developing world where you have smallholder farmers who don't have a lot of quantity and usually will take cash, and it's found to be about 40% is what they'll get of the 100%, so 60% haircut is what is going on in order to get the cash right now.
Yeah.
And they do know that 60% would be even on the wholesale something that they can have, but they're not sure, is the person who's transporting it going to come back and pay them. Now, with this, we create evidence that they delivered. We also measure throughout the process that the service provider is effecting what he or she has agreed to do.
Yep.
And so when it gets to market, it's not being sold for the service provider, it's being sold for the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone which has been part of providing the service gets paid because the product is now paying for those things. So in the Haiti context of the project we're doing, by just minor calculation, we look to where the farmer who was currently getting about 5 cents
okay.
a kilo, to 10 cents a kilo, could be getting in between 50 to a dollar.
Wow.
Just because you're changing the way.
Yeah.
And obviously, there is going to take time, even with them, to teach them you don't want to get the money today. So the first year, you give them the money, you give them an advance, but the next year, they will have more money coming in their pocket. Part of it is really creating that trust in them for the system. And we like to think, you know, in the West, this one of the things I've found funny is that we like to think that we're the one who understand technology, we're the one who have awareness. You can go to the middle of nowhere and now people know about cell phones.
So that adoption isn't a barrier.
It's not a barrier.
Oh, wow.
The barrier is more the infrastructure.
Okay.
Electricity.
Yeah.
Data.
Yeah.
Those things are things who are still challenges. Roads are challenges. So there is a need to work with them and with the policymakers to look at ways of building the infrastructure. But if you can create the access to market, then you can increase the likelihood of actually, and unfortunately, rarely does the local market actually pay you what is demanded by the external market.
Okay, yeah.
So that's the piece that we also find the challenge of those who are being displaced.
Yeah.
So they're not displaced because they were actually middle people, they were buyers, and they were profiting on that.
Yeah.
So now they will still profit, but in a different way.
In a much fairer way?
In a much more equitable. Because I think fair is a definition which can be very fluid.
It's a very emotive word, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. So equitable is a much more, you do the work. And in my point of view, how much you demand is based on the service that you render.
Mm-hmm.
So you can render great service and ask a lot of money for it. And if the individual to whom you're rendering the services believe that it's worth it, then you're deserving. But if you're not doing great service, and that's the beauty of technology, the type of technology, I can move to someone else who's going to do it the way I need them to do it.
Yeah.
And it's knowledge. And that's why I think it's great about this technology is that it really democratizes access to information. Right now, the commodities market is more the farmer has to take the price.
Mm-hmm.
He's very rarely able to demand the price. There's a few commodities such as palm oil, durian, where those farmers are able to demand the price.
Yep.
But when it comes to staple food, mm-hmm. many a time the farmer is unable to, which means it has a detriment to the society, because if we don't have enough farmers,
yep.
we then...
Well, I was going to ask that question around. So the technology is being fantastic at breaking down that barrier and making a more equitable sale process and supply chain. Is that giving the incentive for farmers to farm more, to be more active?
We're new at it.
Okay.
I think that when I've spoken to farmers, or I've gone to twice, I've met with farmers, they get very excited about it.
Okay.
But it's not really... I'm glad to see the farmers today get excited about it, but what I want is for the youth to be able to get involved. And even though I advocate for technology, I still advocate also for what I would call the extension services. There is a need to somebody. It's like it used to be when we first got computers, you had to have the technician who could always come in and explain it to you. And that's the same thing. We're changing the way business is done. So you need people to explain what the technology is doing, or if something goes wrong, what is actually happening.
Yeah.
Because in our system, we're also making sure that the flow of cash comes back.
Okay.
Also to the farmer.
So who's currently doing that job of the facilitator along the chain, both forwards and backwards?
So in the case right now in Haiti, it actually is the government has created a group which works with the farmer. It's called the SAE, Service Assistance Entreprise, and they're made up of a mixture of agronomists, economists, and industrial engineers. And they work with the farmers in helping them and educate them toward that. But I've also been talking to other organizations such as Producers Direct, which work with the farmers in helping them find markets.
Yep.
But the key of how we need to change how we approach things is to create the entrepreneurship in country. I like to think of it a bit like wells. We used to go in and we dig a water and give them water and we have a great well, and now we leave after 2 years and we come back 2 years later and the well is dead. Why? Because we didn't teach them how to maintain it.
Okay, yeah.
And so we didn't give them the pieces that they needed to do, how to get to that. So the philosophy that I have is that it is both educational and also sharing that knowledge. We may not make industrialist or technologists as those people, but at least they should be able to understand what is going on and then to build new businesses which support the changes that are happening.
Yeah. You mentioned at the start around that myth that we haven't got enough food. The planet doesn't have enough food to feed itself, but actually it's because so much of it is lost. Are you starting to see this type of technology being a way to make the food we do have, because you said that is a myth and we do have enough, but is it really beginning to move the dial in terms of the kind of food efficiency?
It's starting to, because there is more awareness.
Yeah.
When the climate control movement is also helping with that, because people are starting to realize, well, if we waste so much food, so one of the statistics which just came out from my panel was about 7 tons is wasted in the UK, and about 24% of CO2 is generated through agriculture.
Okay.
So now if you have 7 tons, imagine all the energy that's also been wasted in that way. And so if we can really go back to either just in time or understanding when something is going to go bad and or how to repurpose. Because that's another problem that there is that things grow and you go, well, it's not pretty enough for the export, but then throw it out. So in Haiti, we're doing avocado and I'm going, avocado oil, 0.5 liter, 10 pounds. Is there an opportunity there? Now, my challenge is that I don't want to be the one to go and do it. I need to So it's that whole thing about teaching someone how to and giving them the seed to do so. Obviously, part of the challenge that I find is that for the last 70 years, aid has been about giving. And as such, when we look at the status, it hasn't really moved the needle.
Okay.
Actually has made it worse.
Yep.
So how do we create the incentiveness in people to actually create for themselves rather than to waste?
Yep.
And I don't think that it needs to where we're creating great, huge organizations such as Facebook or Uber, but small enterprises which are able to be sustainable and create the economic sustainability that is necessary for that community.
Yep. And are you seeing any other types of technology in this space that are really helping to address this food waste problem? Any other innovative solutions?
So it's a circular.
Okay.
So if you think about it, now we're starting to hear a lot about alternative protein, insect. Yep. What does insect need to eat? Food waste.
Yep.
Animal need food waste. So instead of throwing it and putting it into landfill, let's look at how to reuse it. Obviously, part of the concern is that it is sanitarily good enough.
Okay.
So those are some of the challenges that come in. But in terms of technology, things like really machine learning and big data, that's information that we can give back in time. But for me, what I'm even more excited about is really the use of digital identity.
Okay.
Because it is, so one of the things that is important is to be able to really say who has taken action. Not a person has taken action.
Yep.
But one of the things about digital identity is that it always had the ability to mask information. Because now, so we look at how it's used in Estonia.
Okay.
You're a number. That number is not a number that you can easily remember. Maybe you remember the number, but the digital number is this big number that no one can remember. Mm-hmm. But the system knows it's you and can also provide the information that is necessary or needed for. It's not everything. So it's not completely on this idea of self-sovereign identity.
Yep.
But it is about being able to evidence who has done what and really look to provide the security and privacy that is necessary. So for me, I advocate the use of technology also with looking at how privacy is affected, mostly as we work in these developing countries where you've had issues which are based on who you are, where you come from. So if you think of Rwanda, and even in Europe, Serbia, this whole idea of conflict based on your ethnicity is something that we need to be conscious about. So when we're looking at a sort of technology which does not forgive, does not forget, then you need to be sure how do you protect the privacy of the individuals using it. Yeah.
And is that something where blockchain can again be a bit of a, well, could be the answer, I suppose, if you're able to control that piece of data going into the chain, then to some extent you can control who sees it, how they see it.
And that's what's changing. That's why, you know, sometimes blockchain is, I say it's like Coca-Cola.
Okay.
You know, you call Coke. Is a Coke a Coca-Cola? Is it Pepsi? Or is it Fanta? What is it exactly? So what I'm seeing is more and more solutions which are looking at privacy by design. And now that means that certain solutions, so it's like with databases, not every database fits every need.
Yep.
So now we're starting to see a mechanism by which there is what's called zero knowledge. So the system can ask a question without actually asking the question and get an answer. And if the answer is positive, then continue. If the positive is negative, then stops. So what's exciting about what they're calling the fourth industrial revolution is we're not there yet, but we're starting it.
Getting there.
And it's really how all these come together to create the storm as to the next thing.
That's interesting. It's interesting how digital identity that you mentioned there in something like agriculture is so important. We see that aspect in loads of areas of the technology verticals, whether it's around fintech and payments and things like that, whether it's around your data for advertising and how people are trying to sell into you and all of the kind of data integrity issues that people like Facebook are seeing. I never even thought that that would be an implication for the global food market.
Think about it. I'm a farmer. I do coffee. If you know how much coffee I'm going to have, you can then pressure me into a price which is much lower than the actual value of what the work I've put in. So being something simple as my expected yield versus my actual yield, or you as a buyer, if there's several buyers, you don't need to know what my total yield is. You just need to know how much you want, how much you're going to pay, do I want to take that amount for it, and then that changes the balance. Right now we have it where the buyers are the one who are dictating the price. Mm-hmm. It needs to be where the farmers are dictating the price. But if you start having almost what you call the reverse Dutch auction, you start having real balance in the whole thing of market demand, which doesn't exist right now, because information is out there. Or information can be gathered. So for me, it's important that we design these blockchain solutions to where we keep the information as on a need-to-know basis. Yep. So I can give you at a high level what was the production for a certain area, but you don't need to know that Mary, the farmer, had this amount and John, the farmer, had something else, because you could arbitrage them if you knew that information.
Yeah. And taking it back to that simple supply and demand where all the other information asymmetries are gone, you know, it sounds like that's a very clean, simple solution to making sure that the entire chain is as equitable as possible.
Yeah.
Fantastic. In terms of, you take a step back, you've had quite a distinguished career so far, serial entrepreneur in a number of different ventures. What technology do you see across this space that's really getting you excited for the future?
The one I'm in. No, actually, so what I found, what I've learned is I was a serial entrepreneur. So I got hired by a lot of companies. I didn't realize it till I started looking back for the disruption that I created internally.
Nice. Okay.
And believe me, sometimes it was
a
real disruption.
A disruptive force comes into the business.
Exactly. I was, I got it back a few times about that. So I worked for companies such as Chase Manhattan Bank, Hewlett Packard, GE, and RBS. And everywhere, now that I look at it, I bought in a system to change the status quo. For everything from creating digitization of records for the statements at GE to where at RBS it was the implementation of an SAP core banking system to be able to look at a way to agile aspect of creating products.
Yep.
So what I found that with all of those things, it was looking around the corner and seeing what could be.
Yep.
And then getting everyone around the table. And sometimes you have to make choices which are going to be no regret or those things. And so when I heard about this new technology called blockchain, where most people get excited about the Bitcoin, I was like, eh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I did make sure I got some so I could understand the system and understand how it functioned and how the wallets function. But really what I found was most important is that in life, and mostly in finance, what people don't realize is money doesn't move unless you've actually made sure that something has happened. Is there a payment due? Has a payment happened? Then the money moves. Actually from one account to the other. So now if you can start creating those efficiency in system, in processes, then you can remove the reworking that's necessary. And when I looked at that, I said, well, I need to make sure this is something I really love, that I'm going to be looking at, and also one that makes sense, that you can actually galvanize others with you along the journey. I love traveling and I love food.
Nice.
And I thought food was easier because we all eat. In order to survive, we need food. Traveling is more a pleasure and it's not something that everyone has access to. Or everyone, you know, if you don't travel do you really miss it? And also, it is not as saturated, but there's a number of big players, and they efficiently work with each other already. So the customer, in that sense, is really receiving a service and not able to really impact that service.
Yeah.
Versus with food, we can impact because we have to buy it. So we can help our suppliers to change their habits. And we also will suffer if we don't have food.
Mm.
And I think that if we look at the last big disturbance, which was the Arab Spring, that was based on food.
Yeah.
It started with a bread maker burning himself because it was getting too expensive for him to get the grain. And so if we're not careful, a lot of the discontent that is happening globally will be intensified because people will be hungry.
Yeah.
So.
All right. That last sentiment just kind of sums up the whole problem and yet importance, isn't it? Food becoming such a almost like a kind of socio-political tool in itself, and we need to make sure that isn't the case, and technology is something that we can really do to bring to bear to kind of help that efficiency gain. I think it's fascinating, I really do, and I think what you guys are doing with around a solution like blockchain in it is it's really fascinating. So thank you for that. It's been fantastic to kind of learn a little bit more about AgriLedger in the world of blockchain in the use of agriculture. One last question before we wrap up. We ask all of our guests this same question. Really impressive career to date. Knowing what you've kind of learned over the years of your career, if you were to start again today with all the different challenges there are in the world and all the different technologies that there are kind of starting to really kind of take for, what would you do? Would you do something different? Would you starting again, would you go in a different direction? What would you do with your tools?
No, actually, I've been lucky in that I actually got to work in the internet in the infancy of the internet.
Nice.
I was working at Sloan Kettering, working with the fellows sending information through Gopher to University of God knows where to be able to get what the amino acid were. Then I got to work where I was sending, a couple of years later, sending images from New York to Palermo to be able to digital images with Sony equipment to be able to get a diagnostic. So that was at the beginning of it. What I'm glad about what has changed today is my ability to step out from being within a big company to actually start driving those and being able to have a voice.
Mm.
I think that 25 years ago, I didn't have the ability to have that voice. If it did, you had to be super lucky to get there. So everything I've done thus far has been sort of the stepping stone in learning. There have been time when it's failed dismally, but I think if you don't learn from your failures,
don't you? Yeah.
And it's just about picking up, dusting, and moving.
Yep.
So don't know if I would change it.
Fantastic. Well, I'm super excited to see what else AgriLedger do and what the future holds. And I think, I think it's a really promising part of the industry. I think technology in this space is super interesting, and there's a lot of potential there. So cannot wait to see more being done.
Thank you very much.
Genevieve, Madonna, Beyonce. delete as appropriate.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Barclays Bank PLC is not liable for the impact of any decisions made based on the information contained or the views expressed. Barclays Bank PLC is authorised by the Prudential Regulation Authority and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. More details, including how you can contact us, are in the description of this podcast.